I'd like to dedicate this talk to my teacher, Zenke Blanche Hartman, and her dear departed husband, Lou, and to Isan Dorsey, and to everyone sitting here. And in fact, the dedication could go on for the whole length of the talk, but I think that'll do. So everybody here, and everybody you know, and everybody they know, and so forth. And I'm particularly happy to see our vets here. Welcome. It's great to see you here. So I asked someone what I should talk about a couple of weeks ago, and they said the truth. So the question is, can you handle the truth? That's the question. I think most of us here are seekers. I think most of us actually probably spent quite a lot of our lives looking for the truth, trying to find out, what am I doing here? Is there some reason for me to be here? And I look through so many different religions and philosophies, and every now and then you think, I've got it, that's it, I've got it. And then, 10 minutes or a year later, he's like, no, I haven't got it at all, So I did what every, great Zen monk does. I Googled the truth. And it's quite exciting. There's two truths and a couple of three truths at least. And then there's the four truths, and it just kind of goes on and on and on and on and on. And I actually thought I had it last weekend. I thought, well, the truth is that these bodies are the vessels that we're living in, that like the car we're driving. And whatever it is that lives in here is this pure, wonderful, thing without taint. This great thing that knows everything and never does anything wrong. And then I realized that wasn't right either. as you know, some of you in Buddhism, they say there's no fixed self. So the idea that there was a container and then there was a fixed self in it, and that self would go on and be reborn and so forth, that's actually what I was thinking about. But then if there's no fixed self, what is there that goes on and on and on and on and on? So it's actually quite a mystery, really. And then it occurred, well, why are we trying to figure this out anyway? Why can't we just enjoy the trees or play with the cat and stop worrying about all of this? And it came to me that the reason why we want to try and figure it out is so that we kind of establish ourselves. If I figure it out, then I'll know what I'm doing here, what my place is here, and that I'm on the right path. But if you think about all the world religions, there's an awful lot of right paths. And I guess you could pick any of them and feel that you're on the right path. But when I was a child, I got the idea in my head that what we were here for was to help each other. And I think maybe that's closer to the great mystery, that we're actually here to help each other and be kind to each other. And the more we think we've got it right or we know it, the more we're separating ourselves off from each other. So everyone here just sat zazen, which of course is a Japanese word that means just sitting. And in that just sitting, we try not to get carried away with our thinking. And in fact, in one of the sutras it says, think not thinking. This in itself is the essential art of zazen. And of course, that drives a lot of people crazy. How do I not think? Oh, I'm thinking about it. So I think we need to keep it really, really simple. So my dear friend Greg, can you hear me, Greg? Yes. Gave me some inspiration last night. So I thought the main problem that we're trying to fix by figuring out the truth is that often we see ourselves as bad. Right? We are the bad people, you know, I'm wrong, there's something wrong with me. Oh, I'm so terrible. Oh my God, I'm so awful. And you know, we go around thinking, well, I'm actually that awful, but if I kind of hide that from people, you know, then it'll be okay. But then it keeps popping out. Oh my God, I'm so terrible. I don't understand. Everybody else is better than I am. Isn't that right? Yes. Everybody thinks they're better. So this is the part that we think, you know, we have to improve this. After all, we can't go around looking like this all the time. You know, that would be just terrible. So then we can work on ourselves. And if we could only just find out the truth. Shame it's not on film. If we could only just find out the truth, then we'd be like this. And this is the part that we kind of want to show everybody. Look, I'm an angel. I've got it right. Now I've got the answer. Now it's all going to be fine. I'm going to have all the lovers I want, and I'm going to have a good job and a safe place to live. Woohoo! I've got it right. You know, there's that expression, you've got one on each shoulder. You know, which one are you going to listen to? The one that's always getting... Oh, I couldn't do that. Oh, that would be terrible. I don't know, it sounds kind of interesting, you know. Oh, you're right, I shouldn't do that. I should rise above. I should be holy. So I think what we often feel is that we're kind of at war with ourselves, you know. And which one's going to win? Is it going to be bah, 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 the evil one, or ha-ha, lovely? It's not, I'm not sure if it's a fairy or an angel, but whichever one it is perfect. So what do you think, Mike? So Mike is senior to me, so what is it?
Definitely an angel.
An angel, okay. No, it's a fairy. I'm right and you're wrong. And so this
who's
is
speaking now?
I'm right and you're wrong. So actually, it works really well with the Rakusu. You can make them pop up from behind your Rakusu. I think this is the basic dichotomy that we suffer from. I want to be okay. See that? I want to be this one. I want to be okay. I want those two to be together. But how do I do that? I you know, we're born into these bodies, and we all know what, you know, right diet and exercise and good, you know, everything looks like, but we can't seem to do it all the time. You know? So I feel what's important is that the two actually can come together. And you know, we're perfect. Suzuki Roshi, who was a friend of Kobun Chino's, in fact, I think he invited Kobun over 1967 to help build Tassajara Monastery. So they were good friends, I think. And Suzuki Roshi said, "You're perfect just the way you are." And then he said, "And we could all use a little improvement." Most people can really get down with, oh yeah, I really need some improvement. But how many people can say, I'm just fine the way I am. I'm absolutely just fine. So, what is the solution to this terrible problem? Well, it's what we just did, it's Zazen. We tend to think that Zazen just happens when we're sitting staring at the wall. Trying not to get involved too much with our thinking. But in fact, seven of my students are here. Can you all wave? Yay! And we don't actually face the wall. We sit outdoors in gardens, and Monday nights we're at Glide Church. Everybody's invited, 6:30. And so what is it really that we're doing? I think we're trying to get rid of our separation. It's the fact that you all know, you all just sat Zazen. The first thing that comes up is something. just something, and they call that form. There's just something arises. But as soon as we think we identify it, we have to say, I like it or I don't like it, it's good or it's bad, straight away. So we start to pick and choose all what's flowing through us. We try to decide, well, I'll follow that one because that feels positive, or I'll follow that way, you know. But in actual fact, our practice is called the middle way. So that means we can see different sides of things. We can see that this is form and yet it's also emptiness. We can see that. But we don't have to stick with that. Our effort, I think, is going beyond these opposites. And I know Tony just loves the Genjo koan, which is actually what I've been reading this week to, I call it fertilizing the field. And Shohaku Okamuro has written a great, great commentary on it, which is in a book called...
I'd loved it to. Realizing Genjo Kono.
And of course I could sit and quote from that because it's quite wonderful. But the thing is, that would be me judging this as being inadequate. This has got a rather poor memory and can't really do a lot of quoting, so surely it would sound a lot better if I was quoting a great Zen master who actually used to be my neighbor at Zen Center. Lovely, lovely man. But we have to all find this way ourselves. And even Shohaku at the end of one of his chapters says, I'm just saying what all the great Zen masters said. And you have to find this for yourself in your Zazen practice. But remember that Zazen practice is not just staring at the wall. We can do glass of water Zazen. When you can pick up the glass, completely just focus on it. Although, actually, somebody told me this is vodka, so... focus on your glass of vodka, and then smell. So you're using all your senses, you're feeling it, you're smelling it, and then they lied, it's water, and tasting it. So in that way, everything you do can be staying in this moment, staying in this moment. And then, of course, we want to know the truth about this moment. You know, what's this moment? And then we start to define this moment, and then we're away again. We're away riding up the road again. And in fact, Shohaku proves in his book very eloquently that not only are we not fixed objects and we don't particularly exist outside of our connections with everything, but also even time, it doesn't really have much reality. We can look at the past and we can look at the future, perhaps, but all we've got is this. All that there is this right now. Oh, and then this right now, and then this right now. So, how do we live this way? How do we live in this unknowable truth? Because we know that nothing actually has its own self. When this body here falls over and dies, there might be something goes on if you believe in rebirth. Something might go on, or there might not be something going on. When folks ask the Buddha to explain, or tell us, please, is there a life after this life? Do we come back? Are we reborn? And his answer was, well, how would you live this life if you knew that you were going to come back again? How would you do that? And the person said, well, if I was going to come back, I'd have to be really kind to everybody because I know I'm going to meet them again. And so I'll have to just be really kind and really helpful to everybody. And then the Buddha said, well, how would you live if there was no rebirth? How would you live if this was it? And the guy said, well, I guess I'd have to be really kind and really helpful, because this is the only chance I'm going to get. So it's not really worth trying to figure out one way or the other. I think we'll find out soon enough. And the only thing that that does, if we have these certainties, yes, there's rebirth, yes, there's this, yes, there's that, is that it separates us off from each other. And no separation. The separation comes by our discriminating mind. So that's what we can practice moment by moment. Trying, making that effort not to discriminate, not to say, I'm a woman and you're a man. No, you're a woman and I'm a man, you know. Playing with it. I mean, to get over these two, this one and this one. Dang, I haven't got a third hand. Something wrong. To get over these two, what we have is to play. To play in this wonderful playground we find ourselves in, you know? We don't have to be one thing or the other thing. We can be everything. And that is, in actuality, I would say that's closer to the reality of our life than I'm this or I'm that, or even I'm a fool and I don't care. You know? What is it that separates us? What really separates us? What separates us from the trees? After all, everything in the whole planet shares the same DNA. Is that right, Cliff?
As far as I know.
We have a wonderful science workshop this afternoon, so you can ask Cliff that kind of thing. But I believe that we share the same DNA with the whole planet. And I don't feel that there is a great separation. And Rumi talks about it. He says, say I am you. Say I am you. Everything is connected to us, and we are connected to everything. The only time that we feel this separation and aloneness is when we start to discriminate and to cut down and to make ourselves into this little, you know, something that we're trying to understand. But without falling into that kind of thought pattern, we actually can experience being with everything and actually being everything. Dogen expresses it as the moon in the dewdrop. The whole world, the whole entire sky, everything is reflected in one little drop of dew. And that's us. So why would we want to separate off from all of that? Why would we even want to separate off from the person next to us? You know, oh, he's not rich, you know. Nah, that person's the wrong colour. That person's ignorant. That person, you know. It's just fear. I feel that we try to form these individuals because it's so frightening to feel that there's no boundaries. To realise that we are the trees, we are the birds, we are the planet. We couldn't live, for example, for more than a day without being supported by everything here. The food, the water, the air we breathe, friends to support us and help us. We couldn't survive without all of that. And all of that is what creates this. And yet, we come back to what's this? And everybody in the room's probably looking at this and thinking, well, you know, I think that's that, and I think that's this. My students, for example, are surprised to see me with hair, because I... Mark has got my shaved head now, so I'm fine. And when I had my shaved head before I came here, people, mostly 99% of people, thought I was a guy. And in fact thought I was a gay man. I was honoured. I was totally honoured. However, it's amazing what difference a couple of inches of hair can make to people's perceptions. And as soon as we start falling into those perceptions, we're away again. And remember, in Zazen, forms, feelings, perceptions, formations, consciousness, or words to that effect. So can we just leave it at form? Can we leave it there? Can I look at Hank and just look at Hank and not start thinking, well, he's this, he's that, he's the other thing, and that way I can, you know, get away from it, get separate from it. So I just want to encourage everybody to practice all the time. And remember, some of you know the story of the first Dharma transmission, when the Buddha knew he was coming towards the end of his life. And he gathered 500 monks, it's always 500. And he needed to find a successor, someone who could keep this teaching going. So he held up a flower, and one of the monks smiled, and he gave him the flower, and that was the first Dharma transmission. So, the smile. Someone said, my students look like me today. I think it's the smile. Because the suffering arises, of course, from this feeling of separation. I'm me and I'm alone and I'm very lonely and I don't know how to connect. Well, maybe I'll have a lover and I'll connect up that way. Or maybe I'll... In actual fact, all we have to do to realize our connection is to try to stay at just this. Then we don't start saying, oh, he's over there and I'm over here. We can just be with and see our connection with. I did bring some wee bits to read. Of course, I was tempted to bring the book by Shohaku, as I said, but... Oh! Well, that's that. Oh, there we are. So I did bring a few wee things because, unfortunately, I know people liked the Scottish poetry that I did for my first Dharma talk here. So I hunted and hunted in Burns, my Burns books, Robert Burns, the well-known Scottish poet. And actually there wasn't anything in there about no separation and about being at one with everyone. And when you think of it, his poetry he started to write it in 1747 or so, which was a couple of years after we lost our country to the English. So his poetry is mostly love poetry and poetry of mourning for the loss of our country. And for those of you who watched the referendum last week, I had a wee bit of mourning for my country last week when we decided to stay with England. Anyway, oh, what's England and what's Scotland? But... So I didn't bring any Robbie Burns poetry, but I thought the way I speak, it sounds like that anyway. So, in fact, I shared with some of the wonderful vets last night that I once was asked to do to talk at a fundraiser. You want to tell a story? And it was, you know, $500 for a plate of food, and it was a very good cause. We were raising money for a homeless shelter. Think how different it would be, by the way. How we would treat people differently, poor people, homeless people, disabled people, if we didn't keep thinking we're separate from them. And the Buddha's teachings are all about old age, sickness, and death. Well, we don't want to look at that. Let's get buff and stay young and healthy. So they asked me to do a blessing on all these people who'd come and paid $500 for a plate of food. So I said to them, you know, look lovingly. I could have done this and fooled you all, but I won't. I said to them, look lovingly at each other. And I'm going to give you this wonderful blessing. So everybody turned and looked lovingly at the person next to them. I was in my full robes and I raised my hands and I said, Perfire Sansifis, great chieftain of the Penrith, when the Maya attack your place, pinch, trumpet. Really worthy of grace, line is my error. What? Wait, do you understand Scottish?
No.
You're laughing at my accent. How dare you? That makes you bad. Yeah. And everyone, you know, was full of love and looking at each other. And what I explained to some of the vets last night was that's actually the ode to the haggis. And for those of you, you know, who don't, terrible ignorance, who don't know what haggis is, it's a large sausage. And someone said, well, wasn't that a dreadful thing to do when everybody thought they were being blessed? And I said, but they all believed they were being blessed. It's all a matter of perception. It's all how we see it. So, that was the Scottish part for today. Rumi is my second favourite poet after Rabbi Burns. And I thought, you know, I don't plan these things, but I got a few bits and pieces together. And that's just terrible. You can't even find a piece of paper. Don't know why I'm sitting here listening to this rubbish. So I was looking for... Oh, here it is. The Guest House. I bet some of you know this one. And The Guest House by Rumi. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still treat each guest honorably. She may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. So this is a wonderful teaching on that first thing that arises in our thoughts. The first thing is just, and then, oh, I like that or I don't like that. I'm not going to have that. I'm going to move away from that. And then we're developing our whole mental consciousness, the whole way we see the world. So the next time we encounter, we've got a fixed view on it already. I know what that is. So Rumi says, invite it all in. Just let it all come in. Because that way the suffering comes from, ah, don't want that. Oh, that this is really unpleasant. I don't want it. This is horrible. This is not how I want to be seen. I want to be seen like this. I want to be the little fairy, you know. That's judgment right there. That's discrimination. So I would say, or whoever is speaking these words, which is another one Rumi has, who's speaking these words and who's listening to them? I would say, I just want to give you great, great, great encouragement. And as I say, you don't have to wait till you're sitting down staring at the wall. Let everything be that beautiful moment. Let everything be that moment where you can choose not to push away and not to pull in. That way, we're always open. Everything flows through. Everything keeps flowing through. I need to do a time check. How are we? What time should I stop? When is it supposed to stop?
This is a good...
This is a good stop.
It's a good wrap-up time.
But, that was so fast.
But, maybe people would like
I would
like
love to do a... Well, let me do one more Rumi.
Okay.
If there's room for another Rumi.
We're flexible, so...
Yes.
Yeah, keep going.
Let's see. Oh, here's one of my favorites. And although we're not, you know, fixed entities, at the moment, you know, I appear as a Buddhist and I'm sharing Buddhist teaching and so forth, but it's not Buddhist, really. You'll find it in a lot of places. So this is Rumi on this. It's called Only Breath. Not Christian or Jew or Muslim, not Hindu, Buddhist, Sufi or Zen, not any religion or cultural system. I'm not from the East or from the West, not out of the ocean or up from the ground, not natural or ethereal, not composed of elements at all. I do not exist. I'm not an entity in this world or in the next, did not descend from Adam or Eve or any origin story. My place is placeless, a trace of the traceless, neither body or soul. I belong to the beloved, have seen the two worlds as one, and that one call to and know. First, last, outer, inner, only that breath, breathing, human being. Only breath. I would invite anyone with questions, comments, poetry. We have a little bit of time for us all to share.
I wanted to comment that we're going to follow up this line of inquiry this afternoon in more in the context of science and Buddhism, a series of discussions, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Actually, it's gone beyond science and Buddhism now, so we're looking for topics that are just a little bit beyond. And this week's topic, this afternoon, will be mathematics and Islam. But mathematics is just the study of truth, and it's an embodiment of many, many aspects of truth. So we'll continue on that. For Islam, Michael, would you like to say something about what...
Yes, I'm going to quote Rumi.
Oh, here you go. I didn't get time to use it.
You have to come to...
You have to go there to find out. Anyone else got any comments, questions? Miss Lucky.
Does the guest house ever get too full when you keep on inviting people?
What a good question! What a good question! I don't know, does yours get too full?
I can build the next one.
There you go. This is America, build an extension. I don't think they stay that long, though.
No.
Depends if you offer them a good cup of tea or not. If you entertain them, you know, would you like the dark? Would you like the malice to sit down and you can share a cup of tea with the malice? And give it a cookie.
What was the question?
Precisely.
The question was: would the guest house ever be too full if you keep on inviting people? No.
There you go.
Maybe the guests are immaterial also.
Well, let's not get caught in one side, though. I mean, okay, I don't exist, and I do. Ouch. So it's both. It's both things.
I just haven't... This is kind of a topic that I'm sort of passionate about, and I like the little red guy, you know, and I feel like for me what happens is that when that little red guy gets really vocal, then, you know, it's kind of like, you know, like, I don't like things, and then it's like, you know, then it's kind of like, oh, go away, or like, oh, okay, what's up, talk to me. Because I love you no matter what, and you're not going to go away. You know, and then it's like inviting that icky stuff in and befriending it, and then it does transform after a while. Oh, okay, you still like me even though I'm evil and mean. Yeah, I still like you. I think you're awesome. So it just, it is, you know, it's the separation, because this one's full of fear for me, and it sees all, everything's out there. And then when I start to befriend this side of myself, then I start feeling more connected out there. So it's always a teacher when this one shows up. It's something I got to pay attention to.
I used to always try to hide that one.
Yeah.
You know, the idea, you know, I used to get hit as a child if I didn't get 100% in tests. And so anything that would, like I've had a cognitive problem my whole life, I never told my parents. I would pretend, you know, because after all, we just want to show the good shiny face, right? That's the only way people are ever going to love us. And then if you're busy hiding, in fact, the vets were talking about this yesterday, if you're busy hiding these things that you think are the dark side or the shadow side or this terrible thing, you can't connect with anybody. Because I could say, I love you dearly. And inside, you'd be thinking, yeah, if only you knew me. If only you knew what I'm really like, you wouldn't, you know. So,
Zazen for me allows the space for this one to show up and to be heard and to be seen. Because for a long time, it was operating back here and I didn't even know it, you know, but it was keeping me really separate. And now it's kind of like, okay, I can hear it. It's there, and the awareness of Zazen allows it and gives it some space to be and not to be hidden. And like, yeah, I'm just being ugly today.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Anyone else? Yeah.
That's a wonderful talk. Thank you. And of course, a lot of things come up for me, and I tend to try and make them simple. That's not always easy. But I like that symbolism of eating a lot, and one of the things I have struggled with, and also look at as an opportunity, is eggplant.
Eggplant?
Eggplant. You know, symbolically, many people have. Try this recipe. You'll like it. And actually, you know, no matter how much I just really, much opportunity arises from that, finally to this moment, I still really don't like eggplant.
I am allergic to eggplant. That's what I meant. It's not about smoothing ourselves out. We're not Ken and Barbie dolls. And even though we know this is intrinsically empty still, there's causes and conditions, and we were born. My whole family is allergic to the nightshade family. So we were born that way. I was born that way. So we deal with that. We don't have to force ourselves to be, you know, just like everybody else, because that isn't it. So it's all right not to care for eggplant. Feel free. Well, we're probably not having that for lunch. I believe everybody's invited for lunch, isn't that right?
We are, and I'm not sure where it is. Is it
lunch in the community building?
In the community building.
Oh.
Okay. So we'll go upstairs to the community building. Yes.
Right. I didn't have my glasses on. Yes.
One last question. I was came down here actually to ask you. What's the plural of Haggis?
What's the what?
What's the plural of Haggis?
Haggai. Haggai. Yes.
The adoration of the Haggai.
The adoration of the Haggai.
Sorry.